Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, affordable housing available in downtown Brooklyn, but nobody who lives around there seems to qualify. The trend toward extreme workouts like CrossFit, P90X, and the Tough Mudder races, when do they do more harm than good? We will have an immigration judge as a guest today. She will give us the inside scoop on how the courts decide about the children from Central America, what kinds of threats back home, and what standards of proof are required for them to be allowed to stay here. And a new Shop Local program to label certain items as officially made in Brooklyn. We will talk to the Brooklyn Chamber of Commerce president about who qualifies for the new label that says Brooklyn Made. But first, the increasingly tense clash between the Senate and the CIA. The intelligence agency has admitted to spying on members of the U.S. Senate and their staffs and is now trying to hold off a Senate report on CIA torture during the Bush administration. So what does the public have a right to know about torture in the recent past? When is the CIA justified in keeping secret tabs on U.S. senators? Let's talk about both of these stories with Karen Greenberg, director of the Center on National Security at the Fordham University Law School. Hi, Karen. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi. Thanks for having me back.
So according to press reports, a fair amount is already known about the Senate Intelligence Committee report on torture, including that it was more widespread than previously acknowledged and was worse in terms of what was done. What can you figure out is new and important here?
Well, what we know is new and important about the report itself, we've known for several months, because Senator Feinstein, when she announced that the report was finished, said that, I'm paraphrasing, worse things were done than we had previously known. And that was an alarm for many of the people who are following this, that the report had things in it that may have raised the question of did the CIA actually violate the law, even the law as they understood it from the Office of Legal Counsel memos that had said that that had redefined torture and made many of these enhanced interrogation techniques so-called legal.
And so, have any of those techniques that she says were worse than we thought come out? Everybody knows about waterboarding, but that's about the only one.
There are guesses, but my answer would be that we actually don't know until we see it in black and white. And if we see it, and one of the problems with the report not coming out is sort of what you're pointing to, is there will be speculation for eternity on what happened and what didn't happen. And sometimes speculation can be worse than seeing the facts. That may not be the case here, but you asked on the introduction to this segment, what do we have the right to see? What do we need to see?
Yeah.
We need to know. We don't need to know what secrets were uncovered about Al-Qaeda and its network. We do need to know, as a country, what was done in the name of the state.
So President Obama is getting some criticism for seeming kind of blithe in referring to this report the other day. This is just a 2-second clip, but listeners, maybe you've heard this.
We tortured some folks.
We tortured some folks. La-di-da. That's the mini soundbite that's been going around, sometimes with criticism for sounding blithe, some folks, but sometimes with praise for his plain spoken use of that word, and that is the word torture. But I want to play more of that soundbite, because I think the question of how he characterized Bush-era torture in a whole paragraph around that goes deeper. So you're going to hear we tortured some folks again, but this is a minute and 6 seconds of President Obama the other day.
In the immediate aftermath of 9/11, we did some things that were wrong. We did a whole lot of things that were right, but we tortured some folks. We did some things that were contrary to our values. I understand why it happened. I think it's important when we look back to recall how afraid people were after the Twin Towers fell and the Pentagon had been hit and the plane in Pennsylvania had fallen and people did not know whether more attacks were imminent. And there was enormous pressure on our law enforcement and our national security teams to try to deal with this. And it's important for us not to feel too sanctimonious in retrospect about the tough job that those folks had.
President Obama answering a reporter's question on Friday. So Karen Greenberg from the Fordham University Center on National Security, I'm curious, do you accept the president's characterization of torture policy as simply a panic reaction to 9/11, or does that leave out too much or let too many people from the immediate years afterwards in the Bush administration off the hook?
It wasn't panic. It was well. This is in my estimation. It wasn't panic. It was well thought out, or poorly but thoroughly thought out, legal and policy doctrine that took many months to put together and a long legal trail. It was not panic. It was, however, from people who truly believed that the country would be under another attack like 9/11, and that therefore the usual laws did not apply, or in the words of Alberto Gonzalez, it was quaint and obsolete. So, you know, I think there are many things going on, but no, I do not think it was panic. It was too long, too detailed. And I don't think that was it at all. I think this is what they actually believed they needed to do. And in many ways, it was a sign of a lack of confidence in America's highest officials about how strong we were in our intelligence community and in our ability to get the kind of information we needed in ways that were more reliable. So, no, I do not think it was panic. I do think that the president using the word torture is a very important moment. Remember that in the fall of 2006, President Bush finally admitted to the American people that the Enhanced Interrogation Program, which is the torture program, did exist and that it was justified. And when a president says that to the country, you're waiting for the next president or another president to say, this was torture, this was wrong. The real gray area is here is the question of, was it effective? And that's what a lot of the debate over this Senate committee report is necessarily about. And I think in some ways what the country needs to do now is move beyond the question of just effectiveness to what does it mean to have a torture policy as a nation.
So, listeners, what does it mean to have a torture policy as a nation? 212-433-WNYC. And what does the public have a right to know about the torture of the recent past? 212-433-9692, as this report apparently is still stuck in legal and political limbo, though completed some time ago by the Senate Intelligence Committee. And separate but related, when is the CIA justified in spying on U.S. senators? We'll talk about that aspect in a minute with Karen Greenberg from the Fordham Law School. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Karen, we went back and pulled a clip of Dick Cheney from 2009 to illustrate two things. One is what you just said, that the debate has largely been over whether it was effective to use these policies of torture or enhanced interrogation on certain folks. But the other goes to that question of whether it was a panic reaction just after 9/11, 2001, or whether it was something, you know, much more intentional and long-term intentional than that. So here is Vice President Cheney, former Vice President Cheney, defending the policy as late as August of 2009 on Fox News Sunday.
The enhanced interrogation techniques were absolutely essential in saving thousands of American lives and preventing further attacks against the United States and giving us the intelligence we needed to go find al-Qaeda, to find their camps, to find out how they were being financed. Those interrogations were involved in the arrest of nearly all of the al-Qaeda members that we were able to bring to justice. I think they were directly responsible for the fact that for 8 years we had no further mass casualty attacks against the United States. It was good policy. It was properly carried out. It worked very, very well.
So, Karen Greenberg, that's Dick Cheney's affirmative defense. But I also read about the Senate report that it concludes that the torture did not produce results. So how do we know who's right?
Well, for one thing, we listened to individuals from other parts of the national security establishment, the law enforcement establishment, including FBI officials who say they interrogated some of the people who were waterboarded, including Abu Zubaydah, who gave a lot of the information Cheney referred to, and who say they got this before the CIA began to interrogate in normal investigative interrogation ways. So we don't really know, but if that's really true, then why are they so worried about the report coming out? But I want to mention two other things. We talk about this as effective. First of all, it was one piece of a much larger national security endeavor, and I assume that the other military and intelligence and law enforcement capacities had a great deal to do with what kept us safe, not torture. And the second thing is, when you talk about effects and what happened, you have to think about the long-term effects. One long-term effect that is often talked about is the backlash from other countries about what it means that the United States has embraced a torture policy. But the other one is this, that the United States has found it increasingly difficult to try individuals in this country or in the military commissions who have been subjected to enhanced interrogation techniques and torture, or whose evidence against them came from such incidents and interrogations. So the lasting effects of this, when you talk about effectiveness, have to be seen both in the short term that is claimed by Cheney, which certainly is not the only tool we had, or the long-term effects, which I think are corrosive and crippling and last to this day. And one of the reasons this debate is so important is that because it's not resolved, because Holder closed down the investigation into this previously, and because this report is not out, the American public still has to listen from former top officials to an embrace of torture. And if anything else, that's what needs to be resolved and I think stopped.
To follow up on one of the things you just said, should we be making a distinction between torture as an interrogation technique to find out information, which is what Cheney was referring to, a kind of earnest effort as he sees it, even if violently overboard, versus the kind of abuse that took place at Abu Ghraib prison in Iraq, much of which seemed like pure sadism and abuse without even an intelligence gathering goal in mind? Is that an important distinction?
No, because the abuse at Abu Ghraib was for breaking these prisoners down so that they could be interrogated. And so
it was all interrogation.
It was all interrogation.
But then we heard about sadism and things like that that came into it.
Sure. What was done was, when you set up an atmosphere where this is allowed, you can't control what lower-level people are going to do or what the atmospherics are. And so it becomes an overwhelming game changer. But the fact is, it was all about interrogation, and it played upon the sadistic impulses of a number of people.
Josh in Bushwick, you're on WNYC. Hello, Josh.
Hello. So, I definitely can't say that I'm a fan of torture. Clearly not. But there are things that kind of have to be done sometimes. And, like, we have weapons that tear through people's bodies. We've developed atomic weapons. We do kind of atrocious things. But with torture, there is that possibility of getting information that can then be tested. And I just don't think that that there are things that the American people really need to know about what's going on. But it's not a pretty thing, but it is sometimes necessary.
So are you convinced for yourself, Josh, from the public debate over recent years, that the kinds of things that we know anyway were done, that Cheney and others have acknowledged were done, were necessary and appropriate in those circumstances?
I'm not totally convinced, but I also think that that's partially why this stuff is not necessarily for us. Like, we shouldn't know everything that's going on. I'm sure that there are some things that have saved tons of American lives. But I'm sure that the majority of these interrogations were done on people who didn't know anything and didn't yield the necessary information. But, at the same time, I see that sort of as a casualty of war. Except this time, there is that possibility that you might get something. You might get a terror, a target, something like that. Although it's still, I think, completely inexcusable what happened at Abu Ghraib. If you're gonna break people down like that and take pictures of it, mm-hmm. then all that stuff that was clearly, I don't think, entirely done for interrogation.
Right. So there is a line there. Josh, thank you very much for your call. And Karen, probably a lot of people respond with that level of complexity. Like, it's abhorrent, but maybe there are situations, if it can be effective, and, you know, the classic ticking time bomb kind of situation, even though that almost never happens, where you make exceptions to the usual moral rules. And he actually, he raised another example, finding a major terrorist to locate somebody, you know, maybe even without the ticking time bomb, if that's how they were able to find, or one way they were, that contributed to them finding Osama bin Laden. Does that make it more complex for you?
It makes more complex a different piece of the argument, which is the accountability part of it, which is, let's say that there is a ticking bomb scenario, and let's say that you're interrogating the person and you feel you have to get this information, and you know it's against the law, and you decide to violate the law, and you decide that you're willing to take that risk. That is an option that's always open. But to have the state decide, the country decide, that this is a policy that is acceptable without any criteria that we know about what would trigger it or what wouldn't trigger it, or even to have any kind of torture policy, is stepping over a line that has changed the character of the country. And it's something worth thinking about. Is it worth it? Because I want to come back to something else I said before. We have poured trillions of dollars into our intelligence establishment since 9/11. It should be as robust and as professional as it can be. That's what will keep us safe. Knowing that you have in your back pocket the possibility of torturing somebody and maybe getting good information and maybe not getting good information means that you are somehow know that that there is a back door to your professionalism. And I can't believe that that's what keeps us safer. I think it is professionals, intelligence professionals, that can do the job. And what surprises me most about the debate over the Senate report is that the CIA is not saying, this was wrong, we know how to do our job, we don't need this. And I honestly believe that they probably think that and are in a situation where what's been done in the past, they feel they need to justify. And I think that's really unfortunate.
Why not have a written policy that lays out a few extreme situations? Like, you have good intelligence that there is another 9/11-style attack in progress. Planes are flying from somewhere to somewhere, and you have somebody who you have some confidence knows about it. You know, very extreme, maybe it's never happened, but to say in those cases there might be a moral equation that justifies something like that. Why not write that down?
Well, the reason, again, you could write that down, and my guess is you'd almost never have to use it unless you were fudging the facts. But remember, one thing about torture is that what's said time and time again by the Israelis and by others who have used it at times in their past is that it's not necessarily reliable. So you don't know what kind of information you're getting under torture. Is it really worth it to do that rather than to do it by more traditional, conventional, professional means?
Raymond in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hey,
yeah,
Raymond.
Hi. I'm an ex-military member, and I think that it's a shame how we as an Americans, you know, are practicing these things, and we know just from, you know, past world wars that it's, you know, it's an atrocity. So you have the world court that are trying people for these things. But my other thing is that we can always look outside of our house. Our house is America. We can always look outside and see something wrong, but we never can see inside. We have police in our inner cities that practice torture on our citizens, and they use the word crime and things like that. But when are we going to start addressing that? When are people going to start come out and start really looking at that fact that we have inner city police that are torturing people? You know, so we have domestic terrorism that we're not doing anything about.
Well, I don't want to let this drift really over into urban policing and whether it's the equivalent of waterboarding. I'm not sure that we're there. Whatever controversies, and there are many, are legitimate with the NYPD or other police force. So I'm going to leave that there. But the caller said he's former military. I think he told our screener he was a sergeant in the Army. And one thing that strikes me, Karen, is there was an op-ed by General Antonio Taguba the other day, who led the Abu Ghraib investigation. And he seemed to say the military has dealt with its Bush-era torture problem and changed its ways and is better for it. And he says now the CIA needs to look itself in the eye in the same way, and it hasn't happened. Do you think the post-Iraq Pentagon is a good example of reform and accountability being possible?
I think that the military did its best. Yeah, the answer to that is yes in this context. I think the military recognized that this was wrong from the start. Look, they did at least 10 official reports on some form of prisoner abuse after Taguba's report, in which time and time again they said this is contrary to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, contrary to military protocol, we're not going to do this. And they did punish the lower levels, not really the upper levels of people who are responsible, who are doing this in the name of interrogation for evidence. But I think, yes, they did change their ways to the extent that we know about it, and I think that's an important moment and an important point that General Taguba made.
And by the way, to the last caller, not to minimize anything that's going on in the city and some of the abuse that's been reported on recently and revealed at Rikers and, you know, and other things, it's just a different conversation. But conservative critics of the Senate Intelligence Committee torture report say it's a partisan document. The Democratic majority approved this report. The Republican minority did not because they didn't approve of what was in it. So it's really a Senate Intelligence Committee Democrats report on torture, not a full committee report. Are there still deep divisions about the extent and the rightness of what the CIA did at that time?
I think there are, unfortunately. You know, to counterbalance what you said, you know, you have John McCain and Lindsey Graham out there asking for the release of the report and talking out against torture. So it's not a completely partisan divide, but I think it is, to a point you made earlier, about politics. And I really wonder how many of these people feel, of these senators, feel constrained by their political allegiances, and I wish many of them had more courage because, you know, looking at the brighter side of things, they can't really want to embrace a policy of torture.
So the other Senate report is about the CIA spying on members of the Senate itself or their staffers as they compiled the torture report. It would be funny if it wasn't so twisted. Here is Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Dianne Feinstein.
I have grave concerns that the CIA's search may well have violated the separation of powers principles embodied in the United States Constitution.
So Feinstein from the Senate floor, and the CIA, Karen, has apologized to the Senate for this spying. But was it actually that they were trying to find out what the Senate was trying to find out about them?
Well, of course, that's what we would assume, and I think this is a story, as you said, if it weren't so twisted. If you read about this in another country, you would be appalled by it, and you would put that country in a certain category of democracy gone awry, if they called themselves a democracy.
We might have called it Kremlinology once upon a time.
Absolutely. I mean, you just can't make this stuff up. The thought that the CIA would be spying on the Congress is not just a separation of powers issue. You have pieces of the government that don't trust each other, that are supposed to ensure the security of the nation and the rightness of what's done in government, and you're in a lot of trouble. And so that's a completely troubling fact. And imagine how those people on the committee feel who were spied upon. It's a very demoralizing, not just illegal, demoralizing situation to be in.
Is it constitute your law professor? Is it a constitutional question of separation of powers?
I think it could be raised to that issue, and I think it's something that should be debated. But first, we have to get to the heart of this report. The thing that's interesting here is that what's holding it up now is actually Senator Feinstein and the committee that wants a less redacted version out. So rather than go with this version, they want a fuller version out. Now, they knew these redactions were coming. They knew, they sensed this. They've been saying it from the beginning. So they're really willing to go very far in this fight to say, not any version of this can come out, but we need to, there's things they want the American public to know that they have not told us. And so my guess is it's not just the number of redactions. There are certain things that were redacted that without them, they're not willing to release the report.
Because the senators could not stand up in public and say what they were, even though they know what would be redacted. Because if they were redacted, then a policy decision was made that these secrets are to be kept from the American people, right?
Right. And so far, that stands. But we'll see where this goes. I mean, it looks like Senator Feinstein is willing to take this fight pretty far. And, you know, she is a very strong national security voice. So for her to come out this strongly in favor of the American public knowing things that were done by the national security establishment and CIA is important.
So do I hear ambivalence in your voice that on the one hand, this is the good fight that Senator Feinstein is fighting to get as much of it open to the public, as little of it redacted as possible, or these important elements that she thinks need to be known, not redacted, versus, hey, let's get what we can of this out already because it's been so long and people need to know?
No. I think this committee knows what they're talking about, and I don't feel ambivalent as much as I'd like to see anything there is. I think we need to see what they think we need to see.
They do need to fight the fight. So who decides?
Well, the president could decide.
He could? And, he could make an executive order?
Yes, he could say we're going to – yes, that's, my understanding is that he could. Who knows what – how that would be debated, but he could. The committee really can't do it. There are different ways that they could release parts of it, but you're talking about being in a you know, warlike footing when you get to that kind of situation.
Yeah.
So this is really about negotiating the space between the CIA and the Senate, and it's very treacherous ground.
And we'll continue to follow those negotiations, and listeners now, you know more of the details about what is reportedly in that Senate torture report, some of the politics around it, and, of course, some of the moral questions. We thank Karen Greenberg, Director of the Center on National Security at the Fordham Law School. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, affordable housing available in downtown Brooklyn. But nobody who lives around there seems to qualify. We'll explain.